a three-part poem I'm working on called In the Absence of Boundaries, and I've often been accused of repeating myself, and I am going to, because I read this last time, so some people might remember this. It's called Prelude. This is the first part. Born on the cusp of the western wind, Persephone emerged from tips of white thorn. Tight buds unfurling from winter silence. She awakens, stretches the ocean's hem as if searching for a new boundary. Above, a swan paints the sky with its wing. A cathedral cannot hold such beauty within its walls, nor Aphrodite in her flesh. Red sails pierce the sun. Waves enter and leave, reconnoiter as unwanted guests. I long to be nameless, to scatter reason with my ashes, to touch and untouch without explanation or remorse. I long to sleep in your eyes, watch flowers grow in your palms, taste your lost words that drift unread in every direction. In the distance, a clock transcends beyond the periphery of existence. Its fingers play the second movement of an afterlife, and I began to listen.
Thank you, Linda. And next up, could we please have Mr. Draw Harp himself, Michal Weber.
Thanks, Paul. Good evening. Every time when I look at clouds, I can wash my face in the seawater, even if it's not raining. So, I call this one, I hope it's gonna rain tonight.
Give me a second. It has sapience. Je suis mes pieds, je me sens déchiré. It has lungs and breath. Je suis mes hanches, je me sens paralysé. It has liver and bile, stomach and testicles. Too fast, it pounds. Je suis mon dos et je me sens épuisé. It has bones and fibers, muscle and fat, blood and lymph, vessels and nerve, worn and torn. Je suis ma poitrine et je me sens effondré. Out of exhaustion, it shakes. It contracts and it collapses. It dies and it births again. It twists and it twists its bowels. And out of kindness, it waits. Je suis mes mains, je me sens angoissé. Its eyes yell in delight for an answer to their craving. While the scars fill the blanks, it remembers. Je suis ma tête et je me sens abandonné. I stand in the mirror. We suffocate. For now, it speaks. Thank you.
Merci, Alexandre. And next, could we have the reigning five-word champion, Mr. Matthew Moynihan?
So two really short ones. This one is actually about the street we're on right now. It's called Winthrop Street. I sit here drinking coffee and smoking fags as rebels stumble past the pain. There is a tightness in these streets and a tension in the way they live. All the strange faces blurring into one collective malaise inside me. Who am I to judge? I am tense, I am tight, I am taut, I am prone, launched into a virtual world of never-bees and never-wills. A sphere in my own head, a sphere for smashing. Let go and the unyielding strains of society will relax. There are no more masks, only souls. Feel them. Voices. There are voices in his heart, hidden fears that creep behind cognition, monologues of poisoned souls that howl throughout the darkness, you will never be enough. Blackened ink pulses through his veins as toxic phrases circulate his brain, but still he carries on, reeling as the mantra rings again, you will never be enough, put down that pen, you will never be enough. The pen, or rather the falsified penny, drops as the voices ramble on. Synapses scream and burn, cutting testaments rise like a gavel and bruise like a sentence. You will never be enough. Lay down your guns, you will never be enough. Disarmed and incarcerated, he turns to building masks, towering progressions, projections that hide the knives inside. A totem pole for every being, a face that screams, I will never be enough.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. Okay. Next up is Mr. Colm Scully.
Probably all know that. The scriptorium was the room and the medieval monasteries where the monks wrote the books, like the Book of Kells. So it's called In the Scriptorium. The lapwing-in kite scarified a spine. Song thrush edges the closing page. From my cornice window I gaze at them, picking breadcrumbs at the oratory door. Brother Cuthbert scatters with flourished breakfast remnants in the shallow light. I trace their outlines in charcoal grey. The vellum welcomes them into its pan. They will feed there beneath the willow. Then St. Mark's Gospel runs to dust. I trim its branches with thornstone and ochre, pestled and mortared in some foreign land, perhaps where St. Mark once meditated. Here in Iona, the book near complete, I think of the monks, each in their time, who moulded its calfskin pageantry, worked long nights, the willow swaying, only a sapling, when first the prayer was scribed in the psalter by my brothers, Veritues Deus Ipsconditus. What a load of archaic rubbish. I'm here in this hole because my father could not pay the rent to Norma. The old crank died 10 months later of an ulcer. I should have stayed on the farm. Instead, my cousin got the land. I'm stuck on this island for 12 years dressing quills because I could bleed. The abbots are each one worse than the last, sons of this bishop or that. The book must be written, they shout or grow, gout in their legs from drinking wine. The book is knowledge, they know it's worth. Some Saxon lord will pay well, or Viking prince without Latin. Either way, get on with the work. That damn willow was scrawny with age. It closes off like makes me blind. Draw kites, they say, and lapwings too. I've not seen a kite nor a hawk. I haven't been out of this place in years, except for that trip to Lindis Farm. Reward for selling out Brother Gart, dealing the local girls to the priests. No, he's in Wessex, better off than me, translating scripts. What I wouldn't do for a well of usable ink today. Good vellum delivered from France. My fingers are hardened and blue from cold. What's more, it's lauds again in an hour. The drone vanson like a bird humming incessantly in my ear. Off for tonight asleep in my cell with Rufus, looking up with sad eyes, his warm tongue licking my arm, the only solace that I know.
We have Bernadette McCarthy.
I don't know if anyone remembers, there was a photo of a ghost in the Jack Lynch Tunnel in the paper about a week ago. I suppose a ghost. Ghost in the Jack Lynch Tunnel. He wanders down the N40 like a migrant, half remembering into being his form. The flat brown cap from Sandon Factory, the jacket bought in Mallow and Market Day, willing the lifelines of his palms a healthy pink, aioli soft as mice, gorgeous liver red as a barn door. His cilia almost scent, caviar of horsedung, rush of pig's gore. Yet he cannot quite recall how life should sound, and his legs come out twisted as a dream, tweed ends weaving into the white dividing line, as he seats to the concrete of the tunnel, forgetting himself in the rash black traffic.
Thank you, Bernadette. Next, could we ask Ray Hanrahan?
Okay, this is a short one called Stirling's Field. It needs a bit of explanation. It's 10 years ago, not the day, but 10 years ago since I was taking part in a 1,000 strong protest and direct action camp in Scotland against the G8, and it all got, it all got very, very tense, and we were locked into our campsite for, 72 hours by the cops and stuff like, and it wasn't a great place to be, but this is what came out with a poem called Stirling's Field. When you faced it all, the fear, the paranoia, just remember, we always said the constructed world outside is a sham, a great jail for a suffering people. Why even think of escape? Thank you.
This protest is in few words, isn't it? Philip Spillane, please.
Mr. Waite is so melancholy, bides his whole life from an absence of another kind, except for only the company of a daddy long legs, who stays on his shoulder, on his hand, on the ball patch on his head, and he calls her Zelda, her legs, crooked, awkward, but beautifully dancing, all the time, like his intellect. A mind complex and orderly designed to form his head. And his life started by the mockers, who slaughtered the gullibility out of the youth's intelligence. But as he wanders home in slow idle mind, figuring the floor of these new friends, he finds the Zelda under a boulder and names her Zelda after a princess. His only friend, a daddy long legs, an odd friendship that no one could ever understand, or refuse to figure out. A cafe sits in the corner. Black advertising teases pass the buyers inside. Smell the coffee's strong aroma. The man sits with his hot chocolate, a cooked milk that melts his tongue, and Zelda will watch, twitching and dancing up and down his arm, spawning small but satisfying conversation. And a day will happen, an accident will occur, that another will find Zelda, pick up a boulder, and kill the only friend that man that had. Gone, misunderstood, from a different point of view. But that day is nothing, not a worry for Mr. Waite, as I stare in admiration at the beauty of a friendship that no one could ever understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Could we have Patricia Walsh to the mic?
Called Racer Back. It's almost like a fashion statement, wearing your heart in your overcoat, inviting ridicule and derision, asking for trouble, catcalls, insults, chasing bitter fruit, experience too cheap. Just a passing phase, you understand, not worth besmirching your name for. Truth like electric shock, become close, put to the test, just one step too close. No part of the video of any description. Walking humdrum roads, passing the cars, offering a lift, preferred to suffer on. How some can pull it off, I, this studying fame, blinded to a base, parting shot, do left behind, continue as you will. Nowadays super chicks are shot off camera. Now pouncing on us from opportune venues. Now taking your pick from winning of slaves. Doing your love songs, charming your needs. Exercising through sweat, a price to compromise. Cut price membership still doesn't work. Hold in a matter of weeks, a glass too brightly, reflects my age, anger, stubborn meaning. Now fashionable, between darty stops and pennies. My overcoat falls apart. You buy cheap, you buy twice. Thank you.
Thank you, Trish. Next, could we have Callum Bateson?
Okay, so this is a poem about gentrification and kind of like, I was having a conversation like this about the role, I suppose, the creative people and stuff play within it, makes it impossible and stuff. So, yeah. It's called Creative Classes. There's a new breed of conformity wrecking our city, and I'm not talking about this 10-star books, two weather spoons and homogenous loons. Let's skip across to your local flea market, once home to slightly dodgy-looking fellas selling cheap tat. Go there now and there's some art student selling broken cameras and empty negatives to the price of a small flat. Cheap warehouse space now occupied by art sound producers pushing 100 euro bottles of whiskey to the elite. And there are people homeless on the same street. Our inner cities are homogenising, rents are multiplying, diversity dying. So why are we gentrifying? Back when the world was ending, a result of banks overspending, when every day felt rainy and grey, it seemed like there was a silver lining in the anti-consumer enterprises, sprouting like weeds in failed buildings, selling quirky things in micro-roasted ethical coffee, fighting against the prevailing economic winds. When everything was crashing and everyone under 30 was running for Sydney, it was a sole success story in an otherwise bleak atmosphere. Like, even if you had no job and the fear, you could have sumac avocado and sourdough for brunch. Sure, €4.50, wasn't that kind of like a free lunch? And it didn't really matter that beyond George's Street Arcade, signs of alt life began to fade, and fast. It didn't matter that for all our talk of ingenuity and originality, we were actually importing trends from Sanfran 2007 and not channeling natural airing. And it didn't even matter that this reaction against the recession was far from a people's rebellion. The fact that anything was happening, opening, changing post-crash seemed a blessing. Even if it was a white, middle-class, elitist obsession, it showed that as a nation we'd move past confession, opting instead for pulled pork with the Japanese not redressing. And that was kind of fine back in 2009. Back when its first light bulbs reached their confines to rat minds. But now our crisis lurches from banking to housing, our ghost is expanding into the past, and the hipster revolution has formed a new cast. The young, urban, creative class. Who can rip apart communities armed only with a MacBook, AeroPress, and a penchant for authenticity. On our concrete green isle, we have an affectation for deregulation, destination Americanization, where studio spaces and collectives make way for casual dining and shabby chic ironic she beans, ending up with €1,200 per month studios filled with has-beens and corporate HQs with fancy loos. But we don't care, because we'll have moved on long before the last yoga studio is gone. But we crave diversity, authenticity, natural amenities and liberality. But, like a modern-day King Midas, we're destroying what we love by turning it to gold. And we can't afford it. So we migrate from Portobello to Rialto, from Sony Batters down by the Matter. And, when Dublin has been exhausted, there's always Melbourne, Wellington, Berlin, Copenhagen, Portland. Sure, maybe Derry would be grand. Exiles of our own making, priced out of neighbourhoods we love frequenting, we're seeping out to cities and towns where culture goes to die, repeating the lie that despite the fact that no one here gives an F about Ethiopian Yirgacheffe, we're actually here before the wave, destined to save Athlone, Limerick, Ancona and Girona from themselves. The cycle goes on and on and on until we grow up, get in debt, have iPads and an iPad, I mean have kids and an iPad full of regret. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Not many people would be happy following that, but we have Michael Ray. On Earth, after the apple, I watch seagulls light and stab at yesterday's remains, wound around the trawler's drum. And a little red ferry, crammed with sea breeze and cars and pink ears, leans out listening to their holiday. Pushing them across the sound and overhead, a plane drones, delivers vapor trails to a big blue kingdom, and a woman with a childhood she's gradually forgiving tries to dismiss a fly while wheeling her bicycle along the harbour wall towards the corrugated rust and reek covering the fish plant where her father, looking out, salutes or shades his hard eyes to glory in the pecking order among the mesh mountains piled on the quay. And September trespasses amongst the trees, and a stream spills into the upper reaches of the bay where salmon cages teem with lice, and the wind farm whines, and you turn another page, talk to yourself about the gun in chapter one, and us with the windows down, parked in the salting bay, as it must be.
Next we have Charles Dark.
Tomorrow is budget day. And I'm taking an optimistic view. But this one is about predictions for our budget day 2016, the flat season, since the horses in this board are metaphors. For Colts, we like it on top. 2016 could be a good year. At the Curra, the sprinklers will be in use, but the smaller tracks will be farmed. Most Colts will be lightly raced. The big prizes could go to outsiders. Pedigrees will be closely studied, but there will be surprises. Under brilliant, unrelenting skies, the social parade will be memorable. the sprinkler system of envy, champagne would be useful for winners and losers. On the investment side, in New York, where the Dow Jones is a record, the going is good to firm for those who are not colts. In London, there's a real chance of jar in the ground.
Thank you, Charles. Next, could we ask Cedric Bicorne to play?
That one is more about all these letters that I never write because I have a really hard time sending postcards and letters and all those kinds of things. And sometimes I feel very guilty and ashamed because I'm pretty sure that those things are actually changing the way I handle my relationships. Because obviously something is missing. The way we write is not necessarily the way we speak and the way we convey all our emotions. So this one will actually have words which are missing a letter, changing the meaning of them. So you will have to mentally somehow put it back together.
No.
Obviously, I speak French initially, so I might not pronounce everything properly. Good luck. I loved you so much, I ate myself for it. The meal was heavy, the taste awful. A bit by mouthful. Wasn't enough, didn't feel well, bottomlessly hungry. It seems it takes double you to plug the hole. I might have developed an allergy. If I must be sick, you'd be the ailment I'd seek. Rashes to ashes, a toxic thing under my skin, a nasty itch is what you are. And what I want you to be. So here is the last letter I won't send you because we have not consumed one another. Until then, let's be fiends. We compete each other.
Thanks, Cedric. Next we have Ben Kingston.
So I've been writing this poem for a few months and I finally finished it, so I'm hoping that you'll like it. We are flowers and we are weeds, chosen for our looks, pulled for our leaves. Trees sit to us immortal, the oak a thawing marker. Its branches stretch, groan and grow, narrow the bough, winced and climb. The cone waned beneath despair, ivy and snakes both climb. The cone and his sons are punished, but the oak does not perish. Its trunk in twisted agony, as muscles rest in searing pans, bound San Sebastian, flesh contorted. From the wounds drip lurid blood, roots absorb the reddened soil. Time is long, it seeps. Pain so strong, it pauses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Next, could we have Sean Bent?
Hey everyone. So for the last, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks or so, I haven't really been writing poems for poem's sake. I've more been just writing out of therapy, but I tend to do it as if I'm writing a poem. Here's just two kind of short pieces that are really more therapy than poems, but I'll read them anyway. It's the first one written after seeing Kieran McCartan's company's play, Into Light of Salt Rings, they drew. This is kind of a reaction, but also other stuff. Okay. It hits again. Sometimes with a word from a friend, but sometimes by itself. but it hit hard. It hits hard and pummels ferociously. And there are no heroes here. No precocious protagonists, only naked reality. And unable to placate the feelings, people give up and leave. And this is life with an illness of sadness. To lay in bed wondering what to do today, wondering if I'll even do what's decided. Or continue to lay and watch the hours slip by, no closer to goals, never mind leaving the safety of ignorance in my self-made canopy. Was life always like this, or just recently? I saw the play, and I realize as the years slip by, I feel more keenly the sense that my future is any of it real? Is any of this real? I just have the sense that all future is manifestation of regretted memory, and the present a temporary respite. When remembered, it exists, and I'm not in my head, away with fairies, and can actually focus on what I can make exist, however brief and without consequence. I write, I create, so I am. And the ghosts of two friends who died leave my mind temporarily, and let me remember that life is more, it was more, can be something greater than the brief light left in these lines.
Thank you.
Sorry, this is just a short one then. This is, normally I write things on my phone or my laptop and save it to the cloud because I just find it works better for me, but I've been writing on paper lately as well. It's almost experimental, this new thing, writing on paper. But honestly, I found it very soothing, especially late at night when the inspiration hits. I know, you probably haven't heard of it, but it's nice though, because sometimes when you wake up late at night and you start looking at the screen, the lights keep you awake.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is another poem as therapy rather than poem as poem. Write it down. Stop fighting it. Or is it to fight by writing? It doesn't matter anymore, just write it down. Stop crying. Or is to cry to fight the poison of the mind? Cry or don't cry, it doesn't matter. Just write it down. Stop overthinking. Or is that to cast light on shadows by questioning? It doesn't matter, you're in too deep now. Just write it down. Stop fantasizing. These things will never be, and you're needed here in the present where it matters and you can make a difference. It starts by writing it down. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Next, could we ask Alexis Campbell Bannerman to narrate?
Lovely, lovely.
Hi, I have three different drawings I've handed out, and three short poems. The first one is basically I have a blog called The Naughty Chair, and it's impossible to find because there's so many websites about chair training for parents, so it's really deeply hidden in the internet. But my website is about drawing and art and poetry, and there's a common theme of subversion in a lot of my work. Here's the drawing. I'll just give you a taste. But I really quite like the use of the website because I find myself censoring. It's really annoying. I find I censor myself intellectually a lot, and it's great. So this website can be an outlet for that language that you want to use. Okay, so this one's the title of the website and it's the poem. The naughty chair. The naughty chair on which I sit, how do I own? For the ordinary, a seat of shame, but for the subversive, a throne. Okay, the second poem is in response to our lovely poet of the night about Queen Aoife and the children of the Lear. There was a word, a line that struck me really strongly, so I wrote a poem in response. Okay, Queen Aoife. Apparently, I mean through to the marrow, and my story it regularly harrows. But they never teach the most important bit. Each one of the king's kids was a real shit. it's a bit deeper. Okay, planning life. Each day I feel I'm trying to surmount new and personal fears. This way I feel time pass, not in moments, but in years. And I feel my trip and my grip on truth is as a climbers to rock in high winds. And I hold on to it like for dear life as my strength steadily rescinds. And in these losing moments, I feel a force for life to build, to battle killing comfort and apathy with willpower and strife. Thank you. Please keep the pictures.
Thank you, Alexis. Thanks for the pictures, too. Okay, so we only have one more people on the open mic. One more person on the open mic. Thanks for correcting me. Oh, no, sorry, we've got two very short people left on the open mic. Come on, Max, get up here.
Two very short people.
What's that?
Okay. Is there somebody else?
There is. There's one more person. But, Are you coming up to do something quickly?
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually want to do a short song, but I'd probably skip that, or I might sing a little tiny bit. It's for Journey of Remembrance, you know, and I did the Dragons with the Women, and in memory of the friends that were lost in water. So it goes, I'm usually hiding behind the guitar. Someone is missing in the night. Someone is praying in pale candlelight and hoping to see her soon. But she may not appear as he wishes her to be. Someone is pulling on the gear, checking the sat nav, the turtle table's chordier. He won't see home for the dawning, but he'll hand over to comrades the hazardous warnings. Someone is rowing and bobbing on the lee, nave oaks with fairy lights, dragon boats light up the night. Brave women and women who glide neath the stars in a journey of remembrance in a solemn moonlight dance. Someone is missing in the night, with many hands to carry, peaceful hearts, silent lips, and bring some back home from their blue Cleavon to slumber in Mother Earth once more. Someone, that's it.
Thank you, Max. That was lovely. It's great to get a good song. Mary O'Connell.
We have time, Paul. If we don't, don't worry.
How are we for time?
Next thing.
We don't have time, do we?
I've just two very short, actually I'll just do one limerick and then maybe Stan can do for his little thing. It's about aging. Wrinklies resent getting old. They hate being pushed round and cajoled. They're often frustrated if they're constipated and sometimes are prone to explode.
Well, Stan. It's not an epic, right?
No. I've never done that.
We're going to be thrown out the window.
Johnny Cash titles constructed this one. It's called What Is Man, What Is Truth? Ain't you ashamed the good earth ain't feeding the multitude? Ain't you ashamed after taxes means beans for breakfast and supper? Ain't you ashamed the West is the very biggest circus of them all? Ain't you ashamed the worried man ain't gonna work tomorrow? Ain't you ashamed of the welfare lane? Ain't you ashamed this land is your land? Ain't you ashamed fools fill the hall of fame? Ain't you ashamed the road goes on forever for the orphan of the road? Ain't you ashamed children cry don't sell my daddy any more whiskey? Ain't you ashamed the song of the patriot is often the song of the coward? Ain't you ashamed there ain't no grave for the soldier boy? Ain't you ashamed all of God's children ain't free? Ain't you ashamed the kneeling drunkard's plea goes unheard? Ain't you ashamed nobody cared for the junkie and the juice head? Ain't you ashamed of the human condition? Ain't you ashamed the wrinkled, crinkled, wadded dollar bill is our king? Ain't you ashamed America remains mean as hell? Ain't you ashamed America remains our best friend? Ain't you ashamed of flesh and blood with no expectations? Ain't you ashamed water from the wells of home ain't free? Ain't you ashamed I shall be free ain't the truth? Ain't you ashamed of shanty towns gone crazy all over again? Ain't you ashamed the soldier's last letter is still in town? Ain't you ashamed the land of Israel is what it is? Ain't you ashamed that time and time again a thing called love is born to lose? Ain't you ashamed? That's the truth. Ain't you ashamed of you and me?
Pure garden.
I'd like to thank the band that has been waiting for us to get out of here. Being with you is like being in the presence of water. And being in the presence of water and of the sun and in the presence of you.